Thanks, James, for this kind introduction. So I would like you to meet Josh, a 7-year-old boy. He's referred because of problems focusing, lack of organizational skills, not sitting still, and calling out in class. And then what happens is that at his first appointment, he doesn't show up. The reception calls his parents, and his father had totally forgotten about it. Then the next appointment, they are 15 minutes late. Father left a school questionnaire at home on the table. That's why apps like ADPA is developing are very good, because then they can't leave the school questionnaire at home. The family is, the parents are divorced and he lives with his father, who's unemployed. Mother is has a history of depression, and father says, yeah, I was similar as Josh as a kid, everything was going to be fine. And father seems to be very caring for Josh. They have nice interactions in the room, but he does report that occasionally in the morning when he they are again late for school, he yells at him and also sometimes smacks him when he doesn't listen. So I would like you to go to your live poll, another technical challenge, and tell me what are your thoughts. Do you think that Josh's problems are mainly related to the environment? I mean, he his parents are divorced, his father is unemployed, the household is clearly chaotic. Do you think that Josh's problems are mainly related to his genetic makeup, or genes and environment are evenly related to his problems? So please go to the go to your app on your phone and to my presentation, and then scroll down, and you can state your response. So has everybody managed to do so? Yeah, okay. So let me see whether this works. So there we go. So
if you want the ball on the screen, press this.
Oh, sorry, it's not on the screen. Okay. Okay. So most of the people don't think it's only the environment. There aren't many people also who think that it's mainly related to his genetic makeup. You are all in the middle. It's both, and it's 50-50. So I will tell you the answer. I will first get my slides up again. How do I get to my slides? Sorry. Okay. Thank you. So when you look at family history, which is clearly the case here, it can be heritability, so mainly genetic makeup, why parents and children are alike, and it can be direct environmental effect, and of course it can be a combination of both. And I will first get into the heritability, and the heritability of ADHD is actually pretty high. So the answer was that the problems Josh has are mainly related to his genetic makeup, probably. So because ADHD differences in children in attention problems are for 80% explained by genetic factors. Of course, this 80% is based on research in large groups of children, and it's an average. So for every child in the room, things can be different. The genetic contribution can be larger, or it can be a bit lower. That's not that's difficult to tell, but that's because this is an average. But the likelihood that the majority of the problems are associated to genetic problems is the highest. So when we look at a family like Josh's family, the resemblance between him and his father is possibly mostly due to the fact that they share the same genes for 50%. And also other childhood and adult disorders are highly genetic. Only anxiety and depression is only for 40% explained by genetic factors. So knowing that things are genetic has fueled lots of efforts to identify the genetic variants. And as James already mentioned, I'm co-chairing the Behavior and Cognition Group of the EAGLE Consortium. So we also run a lot of genome-wide association studies. And what you do in a genome-wide association study is you genotype somebody for across the whole genome and genotype single nucleotide polymorphisms where one nucleotide is replaced by the other, and then you test for each SNP whether it's associated with the phenotype, so whether people who are affected, whether that particular nucleotide is more prevalent than in people who aren't affected. And the studies made clear that we need lots of people to detect these genetic variants, since there are many genetic variants influencing complex diseases like psychiatric disorders, and they all have a very small effect. But we managed to get there. So this is the Manhattan plot, where you see here the chromosome, all our chromosomes, and here you see for each SNP whether or not it's significantly associated with ADHD. And because of the multiple tests, the threshold for significance is far higher than the 0.05 that we normally use. But still, there are 12 hits significant. And when the EAGLE ADHD GWAS was included and another sample from 23andMe, we even got to 16 hits. So we are slowly getting there. And the beauty of these studies is not only that they tell us something about the genetic variants included, but they also tell us something more about the disorder. So you can wonder if all these genetic variants contribute so little, why is it worth identifying them? And that's because together, all these SNPs explain 21% of the variants. So although each genetic variant explains very, very small contribution of part of the variants, the total effect of all these SNPs is pretty large. And you can see that here, when you calculate polygenic risk scores in an individual, so for each SNP, you add the contribution for their risk, and then you come to an overall genetic risk for ADHD, which is totally not clinically predictive. But what you see is that it does show that children in the highest decile have a far higher chance of getting diagnosed with ADHD than children who are in the lowest decile. So it does have some discriminative power. As I said, not clinically relevant yet, but what this shows is that there is information in those genetic variants. And what this study also looked at is how are the how is the genetic makeup of ADHD correlated with genetics of other disorders, because we know that there's lots of comorbidity and also lots of associations with functional outcomes like IQ, educational attainment, but also lifestyle factors like smoking or metabolic traits like BMI. And it's difficult to read, but what you see is that it's highly genetically negatively correlated with childhood traits, there are positive correlations with psychiatric disorders and a negative correlation with well-being, surprisingly negative correlation with anorexia, and then lots of positive correlations with BMI-related traits, and like also obesity. And then these are the correlations with, it's actually difficult to read on my slide, with smoking, and then also things like age at first child or age of death, so that, which is what David was talking about, that people are at a higher risk of mortality when they have ADHD. So all these comorbidities are for are partly explained by the fact that they are related to the same genetic factors. We don't know whether it's that these genes are related to both traits or whether it's one trait causing the other. That's the next question. So when we go back to Josh, so we've established that both Josh and his father probably have genetic factors related to ADHD. His mother is depressed. That may be due partly to the same genes that are also related to the ADHD. It may be unrecognized ADHD comorbid with depression. That's something we don't know, but probably lots of genetic factors playing a role in this family constitution. Another question that you can ask is, why does Josh's father still have symptoms? So in ADHD, the estimates vary a lot, but to be conservative, at least around 50% of children, there are papers who say that it's more, but at least around 50% of children who have ADHD will still have ADHD in adulthood, and also their functional outcomes are worse, just as I mentioned, things like educational attainments. And there are things that we know that are related to it, and one of them is family history. And then we can look at factors influencing persistence, and again, I will focus on whether genetic factors influence persistence. And in the Netherlands, I worked at the biological psychology department at the VU, where we have the Netherlands twin register, an adult twin register, and a young Netherlands twin register. And for the young Netherlands twin register, children were followed from birth onwards, but the CBCL was administered from age three, and then we went on with youth self-reports to age 18. And in the adult register, it was done, the data were collected every 2 years, but because of the range of ages, we could get all the 18 years from every cohort, from every wave, and then all the 20-year-olds. And so in that way, we could create a database with children from age 3 till age 65, with a bit of overlap in adolescence, but most of the individuals in adulthood were from the ANTR, and then the other ones were from the YNTR, but we could do a lifespan study looking at genetic factors and how they were related to persistence. And what we saw is that the persistence of ADHD symptoms decreases over time. So it's lowest in the older people, but when they are, when you look at, when you go from 10 to 12, the stability is pretty high, 0.7. And what you can see here are the genetic correlations as indicated by colors. So the more it's going to red, so blue is a very low correlation, actually zero, but that's because we don't have the data of these correlations. But what you see here is that the correlations are pretty high, and far higher than the environmental correlations. So also persistence is influenced by genetic factors. So that means that there is a set of genetic factors that influence the differences in ADHD symptoms across all the ages, so from age 3 till age 63. So we go back to Josh again, and we've now also established that his father still has symptoms, that's probably also due to genetic factors. And then another poll question is there then still any value in knowing the family situation, or can we just hope that he responds to medication and aren't we not interested in family history anymore? Or is it important because an adverse environment is still related to outcome? Or is it important because family therapy can be helpful? If you can all get back to your phone and say what you think. Okay. So 50% thinks that family therapy can be helpful, and about another 50% thinks that it's still important to know because an adverse environment can be related to outcome. So now I need to go back. Sure. Yeah. Thank you. So I will talk about the direct environmental effect. So one of the things you can do is looking at twin studies and see what the effect is of common environmental effects. And then on average in ADHD, it's very, it's negligible. We in childhood don't find, and in adulthood also, we don't find any effect of the common environment in explaining differences in ADHD. And one of the other things I would like to mention is what we call gene-environment correlation. So we often see children with ADHD, even if the parents don't have ADHD, but still the parents are quite negative about the child, are punishing a lot, and the assumption often is that the behavior of the child is at least partly caused by the negative attitude of the parents. What this adoption study shows is that if you have a child who's very impulsive, and that was then also related to the biological mother's ADHD symptoms, then what you get is that the mother is more hostile to the child. And then what you get is that that increased hostility in turn also increases the ADHD symptoms in the child. And I think this is important to realize, that what we when we have a child in the room, what we see is an end product of years of interactions between children and their parents, and all these arrows can have resulted in the situation that we see in the room, and we are never going to be able to disentangle all these arrows, but we should realize that having a struggle every morning to get your child to school that it really requires a lot of a parent to stay positive and patient, and that can also contribute to the negative view of the child, in addition to perhaps the parent's negative view of the child, in addition to the problems the parents have themselves. Having said that, there do seem to be some direct environmental effects. This is a clinical sample where they looked at mothers with depression, and this wasn't the main aim of the study, but what they found is that if you look at children of mothers who remit, then without doing something to the child, the psychiatric disorders of the child and also the disruptive disorders decrease. If the mother doesn't remit from the depression for whatever reason, perhaps because it's so difficult at home with a child with a disorder, the number of children with a disorder also increase. And I would like to, for the adult psychiatrist or other people working with adults, emphasize the large numbers. 35% of the children with a mother with depression have a psychiatric disorder, and even if the mother remits, it's still 25%. So please ask an adult with a psychiatric disorder how the children are going, and not only how they are going, but yeah, please be a bit persistent. 1 in 4. So what we then did is, because we thought that these families may perhaps be at highest risk for persistence of symptoms, we collected data in 4 outpatient clinics in the Netherlands and asked the parents to report about their own problems. And in contrast to what a lot of clinicians thought, parents don't mind. 60 to 70% of the parents completed this questionnaire. And we measured the parental problems with the adult self-report, and we also did a follow-up. So because of the time, I will quickly go through the just highlight the results. So one of the results is that parents resemble each other. The correlations are about 0.20, 0.30 in a clinical sample. Not a high correlation, but it indicates a bit of an increased risk if one parent has a psychiatric disorder, or at least problems that the other has problems as well. And correlations go everywhere. So it's across symptoms. So if you have a mother with ADHD, the father can have depression and vice versa. Around over 30% of the parents reported problems, and that was similar in mothers and fathers. So also ask how the fathers are doing. And in this clinical sample, so we didn't have controls, this was only children who were diagnosed with a disorder. In a clinical sample, the problems in the parents are mainly related to their own circumstances. So unemployment predicted problems, and whether or not the parents were still together predicted problems. And then there were some associations with the child's problems. And it was the same for mothers and for fathers. And then, most importantly, does it influence outcome? So what you see here is that at baseline, children, when you focus on the ADHD scores, but it was actually similar over all scales, is that when you have a mother or a father with a subclinical score on the ASR, the scores on the symptom scale for ADHD was significantly higher than for children who didn't have a mother or a father with a subthreshold score. And this was the same at the follow-up, so about 1 to 5 years later. Still, children whose parents who scored highest at baseline scored highest at scored higher at follow-up, and this was still significant. And then we did a structural equation model looking at how are these scores at follow-up explained, and what we saw is that what predicts the child's symptoms is mainly the fact that they start off higher. So they do decrease in symptoms. I should emphasize that. It's not that they don't improve, but they should relatively improve more than the children whose parents don't have psychiatric symptoms, and that is what doesn't happen. So they do improve, but they improve about to the same extent as the children with parents without psychopathology, while they should actually improve more, and that's what they don't do. And that's not related to the child's to the parental scores at baseline. It is related to the parental scores at follow-up. So there seems to be an association, a concurrent association. It's not so much a prediction, but if the parent remains to have symptoms, then the child also remains to have symptoms, and in addition to the prediction by their own baseline symptoms. And it's all the same for mothers and fathers. So this is the main conclusion, is that in our outpatient clinics, about one-third of the families are living in adverse circumstances with parents who are also affected with mental health symptoms, and their children are at higher risk for poor outcome. How to improve these outcomes? We actually don't know yet. We don't know whether family therapy will help, whether treatment for the parents will help, but that's our follow-up study. So we are collecting similar data here at Queensland Health in Child Development, and then we also assess how the families are functioning. And then what we do is we offer them for the children at Child Development, it's actually Stepping Stones Triple P, and we compare it with Stepping Stones Triple P Enhanced, where the parents learn to manage their own stress symptoms. So the idea is that if parents feel better and their symptoms improve, that they will be able to more optimize the development of the children, and that it will benefit both the parents and the children, but we don't know yet. It's an open question, and based on these results, we will be able to further improve treatment. So there were lots of people involved in this research, and I would like to thank them all, and I would like to thank you for your attention.